Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm sure you're aware of the report that was released by the Department of Agriculture on Monday of this week, and it says the number of Americans who lived in households that lacked consistent access to adequate food went way up last year to 49 million Americans, the highest since the government began tracking food insecurity some 14 years ago. The increase of 13 million Americans was much larger than had been expected, and it really points to the effects of high unemployment and the recession's effect on wages and jobs and the ability to get food to feed yourself and your family. This hour of the program, we're going to take an extensive look at hunger in America. We'll have several guests with us. Maura Daly is Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy for Feeding America, which is formerly known as Second Harvest. She'll give us a national perspective on what's going on with this issue. Maura, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Katie Rao is also here, food security specialist, family living programs at the University of Wisconsin Extension and chair of the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium Steering Committee. Katie, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here, Kathleen.
Let me just get both of your initial response to this report. 49 million Americans don't get adequate food. Why is there such an increase in the number of Americans who don't get food, and why is this such a persistent problem for us? Maura, you want to start with a national perspective?
Sure. Well, the numbers are indeed staggering. As you mentioned, it's a 36% increase year over year. What we know in looking at them is that they are tracking very closely with unemployment figures in the percent increase in unemployment year over year. So we believe and are hearing from our food banks that unemployment is the primary driving factor in increased need. But we also know that there are many other circumstances that families are facing due to a weakening economy that are putting them in need of emergency food assistance for the very first time.
Katie, is unemployment the biggest factor in the state of Wisconsin?
Certainly family economic security in general, and unemployment would be a big part of that, is a factor in food insecurity, and that's true nationally. It's also true in Wisconsin. As with the national figures that you all have quoted, we have also seen an increase in Wisconsin with the publication of this recent data. And I will say it's also staggering, and that it's also not surprising given what we know about the economy. I will say there are multiple factors that probably contribute to food insecurity, but the sort of baseline is that hunger and food insecurity are income issues. And if you don't have the resources for food, that's going to be a driving factor.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what this phrase means, food insecurity?
Sure, I can take that if you like. The USDA has come up with a measurement and subsequent definition for defining people that simply don't have enough food for an active, healthy life. They do not have assured access to food on a daily basis. So sort of the flip side of that is food insecurity, when you lack access to enough food for an active, healthy life. The measure was designed to capture what we see as a serious problem among people who may not actually experience the severe forms of food insecurity and hunger, but capture people that clearly aren't getting enough food to eat on a regular basis. So, if you will, it's a slightly broader term than looking at the more severe forms of hunger, and it's important to measure those people because they plainly don't have enough food for their families.
Mm-hmm. And does this play out differently in different parts of the country, Maura? Are there parts of the country that are hurting more than others?
It does indeed. One of the most shocking parts of the most recent set of data is that the growth in the number of food insecure people living in suburban America grew by 44%.
Oh, my.
By comparison to urban areas at 34% and rural at about 20%. So what we're seeing are more people actually with higher incomes, which my colleague was just commenting on, because many families who are food insecure are not eligible for federal assistance programs like the food stamp program, which is now called SNAP. We actually saw in this set of data that more than 40% of the people who were identified as food insecure actually are not income eligible for federal programs. So what that means is that people in the lower income brackets are likely accessing more federal programs and alleviating their food insecurity versus people who are in the income gap where they are a household making too much money to access SNAP, but not enough money to put food on the table, and therefore many of those people end up relying upon food banks and the agencies that they serve.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of income are we looking at, or does that vary from state to state?
The income threshold is actually a federal eligibility guideline at 130% of poverty. So for a family of four living at 130% of poverty, it's a household income just under $30,000.
Mm. Which is pretty hard to manage.
It's very hard to manage. And the SNAP program is the largest of the federal assistance programs, and we have seen more than a 20% increase in SNAP enrollment in the last year as well, which is just another economic indicator that there are millions and millions more people in need. The enrollment most recently is about 35 million people are receiving food stamps in this nation.
Wow, that's a lot.
And Kathleen, if I can jump in with
a little of the
Wisconsin perspective. Indeed, we have seen an increase in food insecurity in the state. What we've seen in Wisconsin year after year is that in general, compared to the national average, there are less food insecure people in Wisconsin as a percent of the population than the nation as a whole. But what's troubling, particularly for Wisconsin, is that gap is closing. So traditionally, the Midwest in general, you were asking about differences across the country. Traditionally, the Midwest in general has had slightly lower food insecurity rates than the nation as a whole. But what's troubling is Wisconsin has been closing that gap, and this year is no exception. And then to speak a little about food stamps, Mara quoted the rates of increase in the last year and participation in the SNAP program nationally. In Wisconsin, for the last year, we've seen a 37% increase in participation in the SNAP program. And we're basically at historically record participation in that program. If you look at a chart of participation from, say, 1995 to today, it sinks from 95. It goes down a little till about the year 2000. The economy had been going strong then. And then it starts to come up. And eventually, it met the level from 1995. Now it has well surpassed that, and the U is really lopsided, and the increase in participation is really dramatic when looked at that way.
Mm. These are huge numbers, huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They are huge numbers. In fact, it's 1 in 6 people in the United States are living in food insecure households, and almost 1 in 4 children, which is absolutely tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I also want to point out is when we look at the increase in people who are living in very low food secure households. So these are people that would be characterized as physically experiencing hunger. We saw a 45% growth year over year in the number of people living with very low food security.
Mm.
So the overall number of people has grown in addition to the intensity of the situation for millions and millions of families.
I'm sure there have been attempts made, and tell me where we stand on this, to increase the people who would be eligible for federal assistance.
There have been many landmark improvements in the last year in federal programs, the first being the Farm Bill that was passed and enacted in October 2008, which provided for the first time in 30 years an increase in the minimum benefit for the food stamp program. It also expanded the eligibility by excluding retirement saving and education savings accounts.
Mm.
For 30 years, we've been basically telling low-income people that they have to expend all of their savings accounts in order to be eligible for food stamps. The Farm Bill made a dramatic improvement in that regard. Additionally, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that many people know as the stimulus package, provided a $20 billion investment in food stamp benefits. And as of April of this year, an average household of four saw an $80 increase in their monthly benefit. So again, significant increase for those folks who are eligible for SNAP, and the federal government has certainly stepped up in the last 12 months to make those improvements. But we know, and this data reinforces, that there are still millions of people living food insecure who don't fit those eligibility guidelines.
Mm-hmm. So attempts have been made, Katie, to increase the number of people who are eligible?
Yeah, I would concur with what Mara says, and I will also say that there are, as she said, the food stamp program and federal legislation governs the eligibility guidelines. So there's little a state or a community could do to change those eligibility guidelines in Wisconsin. However, there are various options states can take for how they manage deductions on a household's income to determine eligibility. And I will say our State Department of Health Services has done a remarkable job in Wisconsin in the last several years to take as many of those options as we're eligible for to allow people access to the program that might not otherwise have it. But I also think it's worth pointing out, aside from whether or not you're eligible, there's a gap in participation in the SNAP program, food stamps, among those who are eligible or would be eligible should they apply. In Wisconsin, only 50 to 60% of eligible households participate in the food stamp program at all. And there's a host of reasons for that. There's barriers, both real and perceived. There's stigma issues. There's confusion about program rules. And one of the things people in my position do is a lot of education to help individuals and community groups understand what some of those barriers are and work through them.
What did you say that figure was? Repeat that, please.
50 to 60% of eligible families actually participate. Now, that's lower than the national average, but there's not a state that's at 100% either. There's always going to be a percentage of people that do not participate for one reason or another, but we've got a ways to go in that arena in Wisconsin.
I would imagine that if you had closer to 100%, the statistics we read nationally about food insecurity wouldn't be as high as they are. Substantially, they wouldn't be as high, or just make a dent in that?
They would make a dent in that. It is true. This is sort of a paradox if you quickly look at the numbers. It is true that food insecure households, people who participate in the food stamp program, if you compare them to like low-income households, they may actually measure as more food insecure. And you think to yourself, why would that be if they are actually availing themselves of this program for which they are eligible for? And one thing that might be going on there is that households that do participate would probably be much worse off were they not to participate. There's a substantial commitment to applying and receiving food stamp benefits that you have to go through as an individual and a family. And it may be that the people who take those steps and avail themselves of that are more food insecure to begin with. So the program might elevate them somewhat, but it doesn't seem to completely alleviate the problem.
Maura, what's the figure nationally on the number of people eligible participating?
The figure nationally is 66%. And so similar to Wisconsin, while the national average is a little bit higher, there are close to a third of the people who are eligible for the program are not accessing it. Another point, and this is research that comes from Feeding America, we conduct a quadrennial study on hunger in America, specifically among the 25 million clients that our food banks serve. And we know of our clients who are receiving food stamps that on average their food stamps only last 2.5 weeks out of the month, and then they're turning to our agencies for help. The reason for that is that food stamp eligibility and benefit levels are set on federal guidelines, on the federal poverty guidelines, and really have not been adjusted since the late 60s, in fact.
Oh, my.
So we know that the benefit levels are woefully under adequate, and that they probably are as far as 30 to 50% inadequate, because when the program was developed it was understood that families would be contributing at least 30% of their household income to buy food. Now, we know that that's no longer true, that low-income families cannot expend 30% of their household income on food, and therefore the counter effect of food insecurity kicks in.
Mm.
And the reason for that is if you look at the proportion of a household budget, it used to be back when these measures were developed, and the same is true for the federal poverty guideline, it was based on an assumption that you spent a third of your income on food. I can ask you and probably most of your listeners if that's true. If you spend today 30% of your income on food, that's not an accurate representation of a household budget today. Things like housing and medical expenses have completely trumped the household budget as far as that goes compared to food. But we continue to use this measure of how much we spend on food as a way to set benefits. So it's clearly outdated.
Right. Another way, and I'm wondering what part this helps in alleviate some food insecurity, when I look at the number of students who are eligible in schools for breakfast, and I'm not sure if all states have this, or for lunch because of their income level, it's so high in city schools, and I would imagine in urban schools as well. It's a chance for a lot of people to have a pretty good meal at lunchtime and to have some breakfast, too. If you didn't have programs like that, a couple questions here. How widespread are those? Are they federal programs as well? And if you didn't have those, I would imagine we'd be looking at even a worse problem when it comes to food security.
You're exactly right. The National School Lunch Program is the largest of the federal nutrition programs specifically focused at feeding children. There are 18 million kids who are enrolled in free or reduced price school lunch, and it's what I would consider the population that we consider most at risk of food insecurity are kids who are enrolled at free and reduced price lunch. The program was actually implemented in the late 60s, right around the time that the food stamp program was developed. And so you're exactly right in your assessment that the reason that we are talking about food insecurity in America versus malnutrition and famine in developing worlds is because the federal government does provide a first line of defense against hunger. These programs exist while we know that they are not filling in the gap entirely. Without them, our nation would be in a much, much different place.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the report that was released by the Department of Agriculture showing that food insecurity in this country at the highest level since 1995. It's an extremely alarming report. Joining us, Maura Daly, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy for Feeding America, formerly Second Harvest. Katie Rao is a food security specialist, family living programs at the University of Wisconsin Extension, and chair of the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium Steering Committee. A little bit later, we'll be speaking with the president of Feeding America of Eastern Wisconsin to look at what's happening with food pantries and food accessibility all over the state. Join us, please. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to Margaret from Sun Prairie for our first call. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi.
I've heard about Will Allen in Milwaukee who doing work with composting and growing their own food for working with the inner city folk. I wonder if there's some way that the food pantries can start their own way of growing their own food with all the people involved. There must be a way to get some volunteers.
Maury, you want to start with that?
Sure. You guys will be hearing from the Feeding America Food Bank of Eastern Wisconsin later on the show, and they serve hundreds of agencies in the area that take volunteers who perform various roles, whether it's composting or serving clients at soup kitchens and food pantries or even after school at kids' cafe programs. So I would encourage you to access the Feeding America Food Bank website in eastern Wisconsin to find out how you can connect with your local agency.
Thank you, Margaret, very much for the call. That's another issue, certainly for rural areas in the state of Wisconsin and for urban areas where we live. I live in Milwaukee, and I drive every day through the central city part of Milwaukee. And I got to tell you, there is no place to buy food. All the food places are just small kind of mom-and-pop operations that charge more than grocery stores. There aren't any major grocery stores.
You're right, Kathleen. Access is actually one of the key, what we call legs of things that are required for food security. And you mentioned downtown Milwaukee. There's actually been research done by Hunger Task Force, which they're currently repeating as we speak, to look at access and availability of grocery stores, supermarkets in the inner city, and to the extent there are such stores, what variety is in those stores and at what prices. We know from research, and this will be intuitive to you, we know from research that if you live close to a supermarket, you eat better. Right. There is a greater variety of fresh fruits and vegetables, and they're at a price you can afford. What we also know to be true is that inner city, like you're speaking of in Milwaukee, as well as rural areas, have a serious lack of access to such large grocery stores and supermarkets. Many counties in Wisconsin, you're lucky to have one such store in your entire county. Mm. And if you look at transportation costs, right there alone, you've got an access issue to get the food you need.
So what do we do about that?
Well, actually, there's a lot of organizations trying to improve access. I mentioned that Hunger Task Force is repeating some research they've done previously to look at the current status of access in the inner city. There are a number of organizations that look at that kind of work and try to identify incentives for grocery stores to come into the city, and that can be everything from local policy-level decisions to providing the research data to encourage a grocery store in town. For example, several years ago, there was some research in Green Bay where there had been a grocery store in a neighborhood. They closed, moved out. There was what we call a food desert in that community. There was not an easy place for people to go shopping locally. There were not good transportation lines for people to be able to get outside that community to shop. And some community organizations put together a survey of residents and asked them specifically, where would you like to shop if you could? What kinds of things would you buy? And how much would you spend at a grocery store on your basic food needs if it was available to you? The research generated from that survey was presented to a company who became interested in siting a grocery store in that neighborhood. They took the research, they combined it with some of their own market data, decided to go ahead with it, and it became a successful grocery store. So there's actually, you know, community groups that are investigating this and trying to improve the situation.
Right. Thank you, Chris, very much for your call. And we want to thank you, Maura, for giving us a national perspective on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Maura Daly with us the first half hour here, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy, Feeding America. Joining us in just a moment, Bonnie Bellhumer will be here. Bonnie is President of Feeding America of Eastern Wisconsin. We are going to give you, we're getting her on the line, an email here, Katie. Food insecurity occurs when there's a shortage of food at any price. That's not what's happening now. There's plenty of food, but there's a lack of will to ensure that income distribution in the U.S. is appropriate to ensure that all can afford food. For every poor person who can't afford food, there's a well-off person who does not care. How many people go hungry in Sweden?
Well, I don't have data for Sweden, but I get the point of the caller. And, you know, I think that's a larger issue about wages and income and distribution. Clearly, as I said at the outset, hunger is an income issue. And if an individual family or household doesn't have the money to buy food right there, they're at risk for food insecurity. How we distribute money across our society is, you know, it's a matter for policymakers and citizens to have a say in what they think we should do to support each other. I will say that hunger is one of those issues that tends to draw out an awful lot of the good in people.
Yes.
We have an enormous body of individuals that contribute time and effort into feeding the hungry in our country. I think I would challenge your listeners to come up with 25% of the people in the state that haven't ever contributed to a food drive. That's the most basic way, or given some money to an organization that distributes food. And then the much further steps of actually volunteering at a food pantry or providing a meal at a soup kitchen through their religious organization or community group. So actually, I think it's one of the places where we shine as a country, that we try to help out each other, but the systems in place to help people who are working, and a lot of food insecure households include a full-time working adult member. If those wages aren't there for them to be able to secure enough money for food and they're working, there is a real distribution problem there.
Right. Bonnie is with us now. Hi, Bonnie. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Good morning.
Yeah. We were talking about issues just now of distribution of food and problems in Wisconsin in cities and in rural areas. What do we do about that?
Well, you know, in Feeding America, you have a system where local pantries and meal programs are able to access foods that can be made available to those people who don't have the access that you all have been talking about for the last half hour. And, you know, what I can say is, of course, we're seeing the demand for food increase 20 to 25% across the state. And, indeed, we serve both rural and urban areas, and the rural areas are a little more difficult to serve because they're so widespread and people are not in an easily accessible location.
Right.
So what we're doing there across the state, actually, there are three food banks that serve the entire, Feeding America food banks that serve the entire state. And we're actually starting to deliver food out to those areas and directly to a church or a program that has a pantry where they can distribute it right away to the people who are in need. So that's one of the ways that we're trying to address this great demand that we're seeing right now, right here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to more phone calls. Chris from Harmony Grove. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have somewhat specious cell phone service, especially when the cloud deck is so low because I live on Lake Wisconsin. So if I fritz out on you, it's not that I'm hanging up. I have a little bit of experience dealing with Second Harvest. One of my best friends in Milwaukee ran one of the largest food pantries, and she was fired from her job because she was sending too many people to county services. I also have a digestive problem. I have celiac disease, and I'm on disability, and quite frankly, we don't get enough money to live on, and there is no money for food at the end of the month. I have an idea for fixing the food stamp program, which is this. Right now, you can go into a grocery store and you can fill up your cart with every kind of processed garbage on the planet Earth, and that's easier for working moms to deal with. And a lot of single moms would just as soon have tater tots and stuff like that. I don't mean to hurt whoever makes those products, but ice cream, whatever. Instead of giving people a dollar amount, give them points and work the point system so that the most nutritious foods have the least points. If somebody wants to spend 150 points on a gallon of ice cream instead of buying fresh vegetables for their family, then that's their decision and their problem. And then I also have a question about Second Harvest, which is why can't people who are on food stamps just simply go into Second Harvest and use their food stamps? That would just eliminate, I mean, a lot of the people that volunteer then for the food pantries, which is an awful lot of work. I mean, it's incredible. We're calling 100-pound bags of potatoes and cases of canned vegetables and stuff. Those people could be utilized to grow gardens. The city of Milwaukee owns hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vacant lots that it fertilizes and puts herbicides on and has to mow every year because houses were burned out. And in the summertime, kids taught to grow vegetables, and the people who volunteer for food pantries could be freed up to help them.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for your call. You want to start, Katie?
Sure. I'd like to talk about the issue that was brought up about choices people might make using their food stamp dollars. And, you know, I think actually that point system sounds like a pretty creative idea. And there have been discussions that we look at the federal legislation and think about ways to target those food stamp dollars towards nutritious foods. But I think what most people don't understand is that the food stamp program comes hand-in-hand with the Food Stamp Nutrition Education Program. And food stamp recipients and those that would be normally eligible but may not participate are can avail themselves of nutrition education programs that are funded by food stamp dollars that help recipients and other low-income individuals better understand how to use their limited food dollars and choose wisely. And that program is very widely participated in. Wisconsin has an extremely strong nutrition education program. And again, it's geared at how can you make a healthy choice with the limited dollars you have.
Right.
Just a couple other quick points on that. I will say that, sure, people who are using their food stamps might not always choose nutritious food. But frankly, neither do I, and neither do a lot of us. And I think one of the things about that program is it helps maintain some dignity in allowing an individual to make choices in the supermarket that meet their food needs. And I think the caller was alluding to this. There may be convenience issues going on there where somebody doesn't have time or ability to cook from whole foods and make a nutritious meal all the time. And so, you know, you want to preserve that dignity and let somebody shop and also provide them the tools and some information and education about how to make healthy food choices.
Yeah. I mean, I think some ice cream is okay.
That's
scary. Yeah, really. You want to respond to what she said, Bonnie?
Well, I guess what I'd like to say is, of course, Feeding America Food Banks, we serve the entire state. There are 360,000 people who are relying on the food that we provide to over 1,600 pantries, meal programs, soup kitchens. And our system really is one of receiving and soliciting donated food from manufacturers and wholesalers and retailers. And then we make that food available to the various programs, these 1,600 programs in the state. That food is then given free to all of the individuals who come to their programs. And utilizing food stamps really doesn't have a place in that particular system. I think, as Katie mentioned, individuals take their food stamps, really go to the store and find the foods that they feel will best serve the needs of their family. And that's really the best way for them to supplement the other foods that they might be getting in other ways.
That is one huge job of coordination, isn't it?
Well, it is. And last year, we distributed throughout the state 22 million pounds of food.
Whew.
And that's up 22 to 25%. So we know that the demand, just as you already discussed, that the participation in food stamps and other entitlement programs is up. Well, the demand for food from food pantries, which really is almost your last line of defense, is also up. So we didn't need this study to tell us that things were pretty desperate out there. Mm-hmm. We already knew based on the demand that we're seeing for the food that we distribute.
Heidi from La Crosse. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, Heidi.
Hi, I'm the director of a food pantry in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And I was listening to the information on nutrition. And one of our problems as a food pantry is that we have a limited number of dollars to purchase food for our clients. And most of the food available to us at a cheap price is the non-nutritious food. And we're also looking at the non-perishable versus perishable items. So it's a problem not only for people purchasing food, but for the food pantries who are trying to get food to people.
So what do you do about that?
We keep our eyes and ears open, but it's very difficult. We have a list of foods that we offer to our clients, things like macaroni and cheese, soup. But when we go to purchase cereal, for example, most of the cereal available to us in the quantity that we need and a price we can afford is going to be a sugar cereal. So part of the problem is how do we get the funds to purchase nutritious foods for clients in the quantity we need?
Mm-hmm. All right, there's a great question. Well, I'd like to hear both of your responses. Do you want to start?
Well, I can start. I do think in terms of the financial side of that and in terms of getting some of the foods that are not typically donated, we're going to get back to Katie's comment about people, the hunger issue, bringing out the best in people. And certainly, if there was ever a time, now is the time for people to support the programs that are attempting to provide the nutrition that so many people in Wisconsin need. I can tell you from the perspective of Feeding America, we are always out soliciting the most nutritious food we can get. It's not always what we receive. Mm-hmm. Since we're receiving donations from companies that don't, you know, they don't all make the most highly nutritious foods, but we focus very much on fresh produce, on meats that are in high demand, and other high protein items that are so important for young children in particular as they're growing. And so we try and make as much of that available as possible, knowing that we're relying a bit on the donors who are giving to us. When we do food drives, for example, we always ask for the most nutritious food that people can give: tuna fish, peanut butter, vegetables, canned fruits. Those are things that we are always in need of and always request in those kinds of drives.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give the impression that we don't seek out those kinds of foods. We certainly do.
Sure.
But it is kind of a catch-22 at times.
Yeah, right? I understand that. Do you want to respond to this, Katie?
Yeah, actually, there's a question that frequently comes up, and while a caller hasn't posed it today, I think it's probably on some people's minds. We have, obviously, an epidemic of obesity as well going on right now in our country. And I have had the comment multiple times when I speak about, you know, how can people be hungry? Everybody out there so heavy. And I want to talk about that from a couple angles. First of all, the research shows that hunger and food insecurity and overweight and obesity actually can occur in the same households, in the same individuals. The research bears that out. So the question becomes, how can that be? You know, if you don't have enough food, how can you be heavy? And that is where, you know, a lot of people are spending time trying to research the nuts and bolts of that. But one of the theories that people are examining now is exactly what we've been talking about: what food is cheap and what food is expensive. And there is, you know, some evidence to show that high sugar, high fat, more of a junk food diet is going to be less expensive. And when you've got X number of dollars in the month to spend on food and you're, you know, trying to feed your family, maybe trying to help your kids at least get some food, it may be that you're buying the least expensive food. And so there's, you know, one theory that that's part of it. Another part of, you know, sort of examining this paradox between obesity and hunger, that people are putting some research behind to get to the bottom of is when you are food insecure, you don't necessarily have the same condition every day, every week, or every month. In other words, it's periodic. You may have some months where you're doing okay, some months where you're not so well off. In fact, what we often see is that people have some part of the month where there's enough food in the household. By the end of the month, they're out of money, and the cupboard is bare, mm-hmm. and they may be relying on an emergency food source. That kind of eating pattern where you have food and then you don't have food, when all of a sudden you have food again, you may be inclined to overeat at
yes.
those periods because
yes.
you actually have a bounty. And we see that in research of periods of episodic eating too much and eating too little that occur for other reasons, and it's shown that that can cause you to gain weight. And so the same is probably true for people that don't eat for certain periods because they don't have money for food, and then all of a sudden, you know, they get their paycheck at the beginning of the month and things look a little brighter and they might eat too much.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point. That's not, if you don't have, if you got food today, you're not sure. And this is true for a lot of people we've just been talking about. You may not have it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So eat today.
Food is the item that tends to get scrapped at the end of the month. If you've paid your rent or your mortgage, you've done so. You get your paycheck, you pay that off. If you've got other bills, utilities that you need to keep running, you pay those. You put gas in your tank because you have to get to work. At the end of the month, all those sources are covered, and you've kind of got yourself covered for the month. What has to give because you have no money left? It's all
right.
Food.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Heidi, for your call today. It's good to hear from people who are running food pantries. Judy from Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
I can't hear you very well, Judy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
A little bit.
I was watching the news last night, and a very sad thing about this. They were talking about the food pantries all over nationwide. A lot of them are out of food. And that part of the problem is that many of the people who donate are now coming there for food. That's how bad things are job-wise, and that people being out of work, as you said in your previous guest section of the show, a lot of it's due to unemployment. And so, liberals like me, we give and we try to do our part and all of that, but, you know, conservatives might be surprised to know we can also do the math. And when the pie is only so big, then I'm wondering what the statistics are on the illegal immigrants factoring into this so that there's less of a pie for American citizens and legal immigrants.
All right. Do you want to start, Katie?
Well, I will tell you that the current population survey that the USDA tacks its food security survey onto every year, which is the data we're talking about, isn't going to get at immigration status. So I can't tell you how many of the people who responded were documented individuals in the United States legally or not. I don't know that. So this data doesn't really tease that out. In your community, you mentioned you work locally. You might have to make that call on the populations you serve that you know better, but we don't collect that kind of information from this kind of survey.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about food insecurity in America, the Department of Agriculture releasing a major report on this issue on Monday of this week, showing that there has been a huge increase in the number of people who are worried about food, not getting enough food, hungry in some instances. And these issues of insecurity are at their highest level since 1995. Our guests are Katie Rao, food security specialist, family living programs at the University of Wisconsin Extension, and chair of the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium Steering Committee. Bonnie Bellhumer is president of Feeding America of Eastern Wisconsin, and we're welcoming your phone calls. One line is open, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a few things I want to tell you about. Number one is we're on Facebook now, and so if you go to WPR.org and go to Kathleen Dunn, and then you'll find Facebook on that page, and you can sign up, and we're having some fun with it. The second thing is I had a few emails from people yesterday who thought I was too rough on Sarah Palin and that our guest was too rough on Sarah Palin. I just think, you know, there's so much attention paid to her this week, but we're joining the fray as well, and Rhonda has reminded me that we have invited Sarah Palin, and Rhonda was among the first producers probably in the country to ask Sarah Palin to be on our program. So we hope that will happen. We may be in the second round of interviews. We are on the waiting list, she said. So we're just waiting for her to be with us. I'd love to interview Sarah Palin. We also want to tell you that David Plouffe will be here, and you've probably seen him talking about the audacity to win. He's a really sharp guy, campaign manager for Obama for America, who left because he had another second child, and he's planning on going back to the administration at some point. The inside story and lessons of Barack Obama's historic victory, he will be with us next Tuesday. So, and you can always find out, if you go to the Facebook page, you can always find out what's coming up, and you can react to what it is we've just been talking about. Back to phone calls now for our guests. We go to Mary from North Central Wisconsin next. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is this. I found out the hard way. This past spring, I lost my longtime job. The company went under because of the economy. And so I had to, for the first time in a very, very long time, apply for food stamps. And much to my surprise, we were denied five times because, as I found out, the federal government lowered the poverty amount. It was 6 years ago, this is what I was told, 6 years ago, it was $28,500, and they lowered that now to $22,100. That's why we didn't get any, and we were just below $28,500. And they kept saying to me, well, it was that amount, and you were $17 over that amount.
Ooh.
I kept saying, well, why did you lower it? Well, none of them had the answer. Well, you know, yeah, they're just doing their jobs. I don't fault any of them. But if the federal government really is going to do what they say they're going to do, they should not be lowering that amount, because more and more people, myself, my family included, need that kind of assistance.
Right.
Now more than ever. My husband's retired.
Mm-hmm.
Had my two jobs. I had two jobs. I worked one job full-time, one job part-time. The little one went about after a year and a half, and then, as I said, my long-time job, and it was a very good job, too. Just went right down the drain. Company no longer exists.
Who wants to start with this?
I'd be happy to address it. This is Katie, and I really thank you for calling in, because this story is a story I hear over and over, and I think what you've shared about your situation I've heard in numerous cases, and it illustrates a few things I want to point out. As far as the poverty guideline going down, though, the poverty guideline itself hasn't gone down. It keeps going up. It may be a matter of how they're calculating certain deductions they take off of your income and qualifying you for food stamps. But the poverty guideline itself hasn't gone down. However, that said, your case where you're just $17 a month over that threshold is so very common. The federal nutrition assistance programs, which include food stamps, which include school meals, which include the WIC program, are based on income eligibility. And the fact of the matter is $17 over those amounts is still not enough money to support your families. In fact, the current federal poverty guidelines for a family of four in the lower 48 states is just over $22,000 a year. $22,000 a year. If you make above that, you're considered not in poverty. And what we find is a whole lot of families that make multiples of that still can't afford housing and medicine and then food on top of it. And it's not a matter of not working. It's not a matter of overextending. It's a matter of that's just not enough income to qualify for the program.
Yeah. Would you like to respond to Mary Bonnie?
I'm sorry.
Would you like to respond?
Well, I just think, you know, Mara had mentioned that there's a large percentage of people who are falling in the cracks there. And I think that, you know, Mary is just an example of the type of person who really is going to probably need to go to a food pantry, even though we, you know, we find that she's over, according to the federal guidelines, the income level to apply for food stamps. So it is unfortunate, and that's, you know, I'm glad that we have food pantries and meal programs that can help in that situation, but it is unfortunate that that is the situation.
Yeah. Well, at least we're in a season, at least. I mean, we shouldn't be having to deal with this problem in America, but as you said, there are a lot of generous people who are listening right now in Wisconsin. Feel free, both of you, to give us a website or a phone number or information on how people can either give money or they can give food or they can volunteer.
Great. Well, I'd be happy to start there. Really, a lot of your listeners already know of organizations within their communities, and those are certainly great places to donate food, money, or time. But for those who don't have or aren't quite sure where they should give their money, they could go to feedingamerica.org. And on that homepage is a food bank locator. You can put in your zip code, and there will be a food bank that's in that area. You can donate your time, your money, or even conduct a food drive that will help that food bank assist the people in your community with their needs. So that's feedingamerica.org.
Great. Katie?
Yeah, and that's an excellent way to think about contributing to programs that help locally in your community. And again, if you don't know of one, as Bonnie said, there are ways to find out. I'd like to also encourage listeners to think broadly about different ways they can contribute to helping reducing hunger, aside from a donation to kind of the Emergency Food Program Network, which is one way. And a good way to get a handle on the kinds of things you could do, what's currently happening, and maybe ways to connect in your community is to visit our website for the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium. I'll give you that website now. It's www.endhungerwi.org, endhungerwi.org. And on there is an action plan that was written by people representing organizations all over the state that tried to identify what are the key aspects to reducing hunger and then what can you do. And there's over 100 actions in that guide that can help you plug in as an individual, as a volunteer, as an organization, in any of those that you fit into to figure out how you can help make a difference.
Great. Katie, thank you so much. Bonnie, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me. Katie Rao, Food Security Specialist, Family Living Programs, University of Wisconsin Extension, and Chair of Wisconsin's Food Security Consortium Steering Committee. And we thank Bonnie Bellhumer, President of Feeding America of Eastern Wisconsin. And also we thank Maura Daly, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy nationally for Feeding America, formerly Second Harvest. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee for your calls and concern. Thank you as well. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network.